only she's on her way here before I came down. So
she must have got lost. Yeah, what a wonderful looking one. I think Joan's new to Parliament, relatively speaking. She can't find the old assembly, but she'll be here. Okay, quickly over to Irva. Let's get going.
Yes, Chairman. So there were a few matters that I still owe you a response. So we're talking about the last thing was how our standards are changing. So we have a new code imminent. The second thing is that inside firms, there is a quality control standard that firms must comply with. It's known as the standard of quality control. It's been in existence for 10 years. All firms around the world use the same standard. We're expecting, perhaps in December this year, a new global standard around quality control that will affect all firms. So a significant change in that area. I want to respond to the question on the MOU. The MOU process typically is a very legal one. It takes time involved of lawyers and boards. It's been in the works for a long time. I think we've been asked this question how far away we are. We think we're about 2 weeks away from it. But the very positive news, Chairman, is that we've learned a lesson here. So we've been proactive about the next MOU. And so we have an MOU that is at the same stage of completion with the American regulator, with the PCAOB. So with the world's biggest audit regulator, we have decided to be proactive and get a similar MOU in place. So we're hoping that both of those will help to enforce our will help us strengthen our general enforcement around it. A specific question was asked about does the client have the ability to get rid of their auditor? And of course, our code allows that explicitly. It's the shareholder determination. You can just get rid of your auditor, of course, for the right reasons. But certainly, there's nothing that prevents you from happening. And the question around inflated profits, and that is not allowed in the NGO space. It's certainly not allowed in the corporate space either. It should not be allowed at all. There's perhaps something around the combined assurance slide that we put up that I was not clear about. The combined assurance slide showed this entire value chain, first level, second level, third level. It then showed a bridge across which the external audit sits. And I think what I may have not been clear about explaining is everything to the left-hand side of that bridge is not the subject of our investigation. So unfortunately, Honorable Tani, we will not be able to, not today, and not even at the end of our investigation, comment about the strength of internal controls, strength of management functions, all the other oversight functions. We do not have the mandate. Our focus is everyone on the right-hand side, and that is really the external audit function. But let me repeat then the timelines and milestones. We have substantially completed our work, awaiting the finalization of the PwC report like everyone else. We'll see what that gives rise to in terms of further streams of work. And our goal on these public interest matters is to bring it to, if we have reasons to raise a charge, to bring it to that point in 18 months, and then to run a disciplinary hearing. How long does disciplinary hearing last? In the case of the Linkway matter, it was over within a week. In the case of other matters, we know from global experience, they can go on for many years. And we've had experience of investigations going on for 4 years, depending on the level of complexity and the level of pushback involved. So unfortunately, I can't commit to anything more than that. Disclosure around the name, the practice on listed companies in South Africa is that auditors sign off the reports not only in the name of the firm, but in the name of the individual engagement partner. So that information is freely available. Of course, we will name individuals after we have decided to charge them, and if that matter reaches a successful conclusion and our disciplinary committee says that there's some guilt to be answered for. I was asked an important question on SAA. I'm not familiar with the detail around that case, so I'll allow my team to talk. Yes, indeed. Yes.
But there's another committee that's now dealing with it, mostly public enterprises. We don't need to mandate you. Mr. Lees will go to that committee and try to run it.
That's it. Good.
Right. Now, what are we saying? Firstly, they want 30 million rands more. I feel very strongly, I don't know whether they warrant 30 million, but whatever it is they need, cut this committee, write to the minister within 24 hours and say, give them the money. What does the committee feel? Of course, the standing committee on finance, what do we feel? No, no, no. We want action. They have repeatedly raised their restraints on resources. The standing committee on finance can only do this. But what I'm asking for is a mandate. In other words, we complain. I mean, we share their concerns. We complain to the executive repeatedly in our reports that they need more support. Now, here it is. They come in a figure. Why can't we write to the minister and say that we understand these negotiations taking place? We seriously think consideration needs to be given to giving them the amount that they need. They won't say 30 million. But we understand they're appealing for 30 million. Who's opposed to that? Yeah, well, in that case, we're going ahead and doing it, right? Because it's consistent with the work we have to do. We don't need a mandate for everything. The wording will be, we understand you want 30 million. We feel very strongly that serious consideration should be given to meeting their needs in this regard. As for your other issues, we will look for ways in which between now and the time we process the bill to raise those issues as well. But we've raised it in our report. So it's consistent. There's no need to get a mandate for everything, especially if you've already got antecedents. Is it precedents? I don't know. Precedents, right? With reports you've actually shaped where you've got recommendations in that regard. Good? Okay. Anything else people want to ask? Yes, Mr. Mania. Right.
I'm sorry for having missed that. The question related to the role of small firms, particularly the role of small firms in other jurisdictions. I can't answer definitively about what the regulators in those jurisdictions are doing. The advice is duly noted. I can answer for it in respect of South Africa. I think a crucial point was made earlier in the day about the approach to group audits. Chairman Yu emphasized at that point that, in fact, this is how many multinational audits are done around the world, that there's a group auditor and he or she makes use of component auditors in jurisdictions where the group auditor may not have an office. And that is an established mechanism around which this happens. But the risk that Honorable Mania points out, that regulators in those countries that may have been auditors to small parts of the group need to be engaged with, communicated with, and informed, is certainly something I'll take away with. Thank you.
Surely, shouldn't you connect with those regulators? Because you might get information of value to the work you're doing. Or is it asking too much? Or is it not? So why don't you do that where you can?
Yes, of course.
Within the limits you have.
And that may be one of the directions you get from the PwC report. They identify a particular country, a particular transaction, and therefore that's where we'll have to reach out to.
Consider that and do it, and you can't report back, Zakela, please note this to this committee or the committees why you haven't done it at the next meeting of sign-off, on sign-off. Yes?
And it's for that reason, obviously, Chair, that it's crucial that sign-off provide us with details of its structures and the auditors of every component, which, as I've mentioned earlier, they undertook to do at the previous hearing.
Okay, you're scoring points. I mean, we agreed on that. Okay, who's next? Nobody. Good. So, right. So, we have already agreed, Mr. Mania, to your proposal earlier. We said they must do it within so many days, and we've mandated Alan to see that it gets done. Good. Right. Is there anything else? No? Good. Yeah. Well, Falma?
Sorry, Chair. Does Honourable Manier mean, does that include the slide by Mr. Lagrange? Because I couldn't really see to that, but can we also get that on the email? That it hasn't arrived.
You will recall. Can Alan, can you follow up? Are you in charge or Tebow? Right, can you ensure it gets done? I mean, he's got the thing, ask him to email it. We asked him to do it while he was there with his cell phone. He could have done it in this day and age. He must do it by tomorrow morning. Okay? Good. Right. Next then is General Connor from Hawks. Okay. What's happened? General, where are we? How many people have been arrested since then? And when are they appearing in court? That's what we basically want to know. And if not, why not?
Good evening, Chair and Honourable Members, or Honourable Chairpersons and Members. Those that do not know me, I'm Major General Kana, the Head of Serious Commercial Crime within the Directorate for the Crime Investigation. Honourable Chairperson and Members, I just want us to take one step back to explain. Everything has been said here today in terms of the size and the magnitude of this matter, how big it is. Now, in the same vein, I need to state how big it is and the size it is equally big in terms of investigations. Ordinarily, a case is laid, a complaint is laid with the police for investigation. A fraud matter, big company has been hijacked or run into liquidation. Then there's a statement of complaint highlighting who has done what, at what point, what the prejudice and damages are. In this instance, we have three cases, like I stated earlier. Three registered cases. It has been given in previous reports. But the difference in what ordinarily happens is the fact that we have all three cases cannot say anything how, what happened. All they did in their statement of complaint was to state to us their reliance on media reports in terms of how the share price fell of Steinhoff, what the investment was and what they have lost, and that it is alleged that there were irregular accounting practices which led to the plunging of the share price. Now, Steinhoff has submitted a Section 34 report, like I said already. Now, in terms of Section 34 of the Brecker Act, there is supposed to be a statement that must accompany that report. And 34 says a person in a position of authority must report what, how, where has happened and who is responsible for their criminal activities. Now, Mr. Boysen, who is the chairperson of the audit committee of Steinhoff, filed that report with us. But the statement which was supposed to be appended was not there. We went back. Our Serious Economic Affairs Unit report directly to me, had a meeting with Mr. Boysen to get that statement. Because now, ordinarily, under normal circumstances, you would have a complainant. Here you have a very unique situation. Steinhoff as a company is seen as responsible for this. But the complaint is now coming from Steinhoff. So we have to now sit with Mr. Boysen, as the chairperson of the audit committee, who is also, very importantly, director of Steinhoff. So we were asked Mr. Boysen, we had a meeting with Mr. Boysen to get his statement. Mr. Boysen later on forwarded the statement via his attorneys, which is Versmans. We sent the statement back, we said, but the statement was basically so empty. And we highlighted, we had a follow-up meeting to say this is what's short in the statement. And this, remember, on the 31st, this statement was signed and submitted to us. 31st of January, chairperson. Through all of this, to cut a long story short, as we said tonight, we are still waiting for the statement that will set out what went wrong. Now, I'm not pointing fingers, but as the police, that statement will set the tone for our investigations. And we have not yet received that statement. Versmans represents Mr. Boysen. Now, I do not know in what capacity. Versmans was appointed by Steinhoff to represent Mr. Boysen. Mr. Boysen is acting as the chairperson of the audit committee. Now, I was a bit uncomfortable with the dual roles Mr. Boysen is fulfilling here. Because if you look at the director and the chairperson of the audit committee, you look at the function of an audit committee and what he's supposed to be doing. Now, here you have a director who has a fiduciary duty towards the company and the shareholders and how the company is run. I did inquiries amongst knowledgeable people in the field of accounting, and I asked them whether it is allowed, is anything irregular. They said there's nothing unlawful, but it is not desirable for a person, the chairperson of the audit committee, also to be a director. But that be the case. We are still waiting for the statement from Mr. Boysen, which honestly, and I can say it, we as the Hawks, we are not pointing fingers tonight to say because of this we could not move. But their statement should be setting the tone of our investigation.
I think you made the point. We're going to really come back to that. Can you please move on? Yeah.
Thanks. Now, we are working in sync with other stakeholders, like everyone that has presented beforehand. I can confirm there were meetings held where we all sit together. But now, the one problem that, and I wish that FCSA, of SSCA, yeah, well, yes, so, because it came to our attention that the FSCA were conducting investigations into Steinhoff as early as 2013, 2014. Now, we tried to speak to them in terms of what were the type of investigations, why were we investigating Steinhoff, what is the relevance of that investigation, how did it tie into our current situation. We did not get answers there too. So we are still in limbo as to make that connection. Well, I can say that I myself did have a meeting, like the previous presenter spoke about, with IRBA, and I requested their intervention in trying to expedite what they are doing. As we are, there are three cases, but with no substance into it. I think I'm going to, in this presentation, I'm going to try and deal with the questions that Ashley was following also through, so that when I move, I can confirm that coming from the questions, yes, there were engagements with, like it was said earlier, with Steinhoff, but our engagements is we had three meetings with Mr. Boysen, and those meetings relate to the completion of his statement, which is still outstanding. Then we had a meeting with the audit committee regarding the Section 34 report. I think that also relates to Mr. Boysen. We had four meetings with PwC that's pertaining to the reports that were forthcoming. We are still waiting for the report. And there were two meetings with Versmans as the attorneys. Now, Versmans is currently sitting, compiling the statement for or assisting Mr. Boysen in compiling the his statement into this or into whatever he needed to say in filing the Section 34 report. If I can just stand still on the Section 34, I think I did speak about how Section 34 is being abused in general by everybody. But I think we also need to, sometimes people say we report to the police and then they would refer to the Section 34, which I think is very misleading. And I think we really need to look at how we enforce the Section 34. Because if we look at the entirety of all the allegations, one will have to look at the level of compliance and non-compliance at every layer of Steinhoff, coming from when they first came to realize what went wrong, as Mr. What's his name? The CFO, as indicated earlier. Mr. Lagrange, as indicated earlier, because the minute they became aware, their duty was activated to report whatever happened or transpired from there. Because now he indicated he became aware in December 2017, but and certain facts were stated there, but those facts were not in the report. But these are issues for. And when one looked at from our investigation with the prosecutors, now we sit and do case planning with the NPA, we have dedicated prosecutors. There's three dedicated prosecutors that were assigned to this matter because of the magnitude of it. And there's a plethora of, if we just look at it, unsubstantiated, of company air contraventions that have been supposedly contravened. Fraud coming from what has been said. But now the unfortunate part is we have to wait for the statement to see what is stated factually in the statement before we can move on from there. The one concern that we have is the FCA has indicated what they are doing and how far they are in close to completion of their investigations. But I think the interconnectedness and how we are in sync with the investigations between FSCA and PwC is of crucial importance. And I intend to have a meeting. We were supposed to have it tonight with Steinhoff to see to what extent PwC can be made available to share information with the other stakeholders so that when we investigate, these investigations should be in sync and to take it to the next level. We have, in our engagements with Interpol, because the investigations in Germany, which is underway there, and the civil suit in the Netherlands is of great importance, coming from what was the basis of the civil suit, because that would give us also a further indication as to how or what was happening. But we have made some inroads with the authorities in Germany. They have even invited us. We are just busy with the mutual legal assistance application that must go through Interpol at this stage, because beforehand we had to have a lot of engagement between Interpol and them. Now they have agreed. So we are now busy with the MLA application to see them. The Netherlands, there is a FIU that had to be engaged, which is also now engaged, and we are waiting for feedback from them. The FIU is a financial investigation unit, which is dealing with the civil matter more from a financial investigation perspective, not a criminal investigative perspective. Now, what we regard as constraints, sir, at this point in time in the investigation is maybe the time that we have taken up till now for the completion of the statement of Mr. Boysen. Then, secondly, it is the, I think we, the as much as all stakeholders are working vigorously behind the scenes, maybe the silent mentality is still part of an inhibiting factor there for us, and we will have to come more closer in terms of what everyone is doing so that we can link everything up in terms of what they are doing. We have taken note, Honorable Chair, that I do not know how one will address this issue, because a lot of emphasis today has gone into the plight of investors, public funds, especially the pension fund of vulnerable people that has plunged. Now, if we take a look at the class action that was brought in the Netherlands, my concern was the action against that company as South African Steinhoff International. The directors of Steinhoff International are South African as well as German nationals. Now, if they are South African and German nationals, then it means we knew long ago about what was happening in that site. And if we knew long ago, the responsibility of reporting was activated at that time when things started happening abroad. But now the issue of jurisdiction becomes an issue. Now, when we speak about how do we assist the victims, my issue is the victims in South Africa are the investors here, whoever have invested in Steinhoff. They have lost money. Most of all, PIC lost the most, who are carrying pension monies of a lot of individuals. But now, how do you balance the scales? Yeah, because that's where I come from. Because on the one hand, Steinhoff has a duty of care towards the investors. But on the other hand, Steinhoff is facing those legal battles there. So they are sitting like in a catch-22 position. Here you have a duty of care because ordinarily in that class action, one would have asked investors here, have you joined that class action so that we can also retrieve some money for you in that action there. That is now from a total different perspective, outside the criminal aspect. I'm speaking because I heard a lot of what was said today about how we're going to look at the interests of innocent parties. And I do not know. I don't have the answer to that question. I'm just raising it as a point of concern, because on the one hand, they're supposed to save the company, and the other hand, they have to look at the interests of their investors. Honourable Chair, in a nutshell, we have gone. There is one case that was recently registered in Sandton, and the complainant is the chairperson of Steinhoff. Now, that case is our secondary focus. Our primary focus, it deals directly with an aspect relating to what happened. But it does not, and it comes from the report, a report from PwC. That forms part of our secondary investigation. Although it is related, but the bigger part of the investigation is the report that is still outstanding from PwC. Now, the one concern on that report is that the report that is being awaited, according to our information, is an interim report. And the interim report will come with a request for extension of mandate, because they have not anticipated the magnitude. I have been informed that Steinhoff sits with plus minus between 500 and 700 affiliates, companies that's layered in the holding under the holding company. And if one looks at the auditing that needs to go into that to determine what really happened, was the main question that was asked here today. And I do not know whether they are in the position. I think they're all waiting for the report, is what happened. And I think we will all be much the wiser once we have that report or interim report that will paint the picture. And of importance is one needs to understand now what was the actual mandate given to PwC to investigate, and I think we didn't touch on that. Because if we can understand what the actual mandate for PwC was, then we would be able to know what type of report we can expect for now, anticipating that they will ask for the mandate to be broadened out. And I think, Honourable Chairperson, we are at this point. As much as we want to do more, I have place people around the country on standby. The minute we get the report, we'll rope more members in, because we are honestly sitting also with the deficit in terms of manpower. So, but to assist in the process of expediting, we have placed other people around the country on standby to assist. But we cannot move until we have that complete statement from Mr. Boyson. Thank you, Chair.
Members, what do you want to say? Mr. Mania, Tandy, Vilma, co-chairs, you can speak whenever you want. Yeah, go ahead.
Chair, honestly, with respect, I now know why Marcus Huster is hanging out looking very, very calm in her harness. I mean, it seems to me that the truth of the matter is there is no investigation underway in the Hawks and, frankly, no capacity to investigate. To possibly get it to the heart of that second point, General, I mean, as I understand it, you head up the Serious Commercial Crimes Unit. How many investigators do you have under your command? And how many of those investigators are, in fact, qualified to investigate complex transnational crime? How many of them, for example, are qualified accountants and forensic auditors? And what is your annual budget for your unit? Chair, we obviously want to deal with the Section 34 report, but we'll put those questions to Steinhoff when we have an opportunity.
So, Kana, no, I want him to listen to me. General Kana, I'm going to make comments, and I know they're nonsensical, but I know you'll understand. I want you to investigate by law the role of the South African flag. You see, there are South Africans involved here. And I'm always worried about this animal called Springbok. It runs very fast. If you look at time, it's something else. And I then get worried that people can run away to far places like Australia. And I believe the law is on your side, especially the Constitution. And don't drop the case because it's a possible watertight case if you close the door. I thank you.
Mr. Chairman, through you, we heard earlier that there were reports being given to the CIPC, I think, if I remember correctly, and the CIPC had taken certain action. But the question really is, are those reports not going to you, General? I mean, you're just waiting for one statement. You haven't asked for any of these interim findings from the PwC or anything like that. You seem to have had a number of meetings with various representatives of Steinhoff and PwC. But you're saying that all those meetings have been fruitless because you haven't received this founding statement or whatever the name of it is from Mr. Boyston. Which I just find quite strange that given that there is information, other regulators are moving on it, and yet the hawks appear, and you can correct me, but appear you've had meetings, but you've actually not got to the substance of any of the cases. Three have been registered. I'm not sure who's registered them. Do they emanate from findings of PwC? What is the origin of those cases? I really am battling to get to a feel of what exactly your division has received and acted on.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll wait a bit because my question is really for Steinhoff relating to Mr. Boyson. So I'll wait. Thanks.
Just to build on Alf's question, can you just be specific about what three cases we are talking about? What are the case numbers? What is alleged? That's the first question. And then just to build on my second question, General, I asked you how many investigators were allocated to your unit and the qualification and the budget for their unit. But just supplementary to that, how many investigators are allocated to this investigation specifically?
Thank you, Co-Chair. Yes, I the hawks, by the sound of the name, I had rather thought that they would dive in rather quickly, as it were. Major General Kana, you talk about investigations, and then in the same breath, as it were, you indicate you're being put at a halt, at a red robot, because you haven't got the statement. Notwithstanding, and I must say, the Honourable Lees and the Honourable Mania have referred to these points, other information has been made public. Now, I'm not in the police per se or the Hawks or anything else, and I may, maybe because of my lack of information there, that I don't understand with information out there why the Hawks can't go to that particular regulatory authority and say, please can I have this? It will assist us in this investigation. Or maybe you can then tell me why you can't do that. Because in all of the so-called investigations I've heard about, the investigating authority has got a lot of leeway to seek such information. And then as you put it, and someone has put it, there were Germans and South Africans involved, and the Netherlands class action, and you have Interpol. And I must say, my I used to really have a high regard for Interpol. Now I'm beginning to wonder after what you're saying. You're working with Interpol and you can't get anything. And I really would like to know exactly what is blocking Interpol from releasing such information. I'm not in finance, and I'm not in Interpol or the police, but I am in trade and industry, and it is a serious concern to me if Interpol put the brakes on something, or one of the regulatory authorities in our own country have put the brakes and are saying, you can't have this. I don't know. So Major General Kana, please assist me. Thank you.
Okay, a few quick questions. Firstly, you're saying you can't get the statement from Steiner. Why do you think they're not giving you the statement so many months later? Steiner must answer that question too, unless one of you is lying, because that's what may imply, I don't know. Secondly, they say they gave you the PwC statement. You say you don't have it. Again, one of you is lying. Unless it is that, you know, you are sending it to somebody, Steinhoff, that is, somebody who is withholding it from you. Maybe it's there in your files with some person under you or above you. I don't know. So that's a possibility. But it's not our job to speculate. We just want the answers here before Parliament, and you have to answer truthfully whoever it is that's at variance with what's really going on. Then the question I want to ask you is, I watch a lot of TV when I'm not stuck in this committee. I love Law and Order. And I read, now what I see always is person A assaults person B. Then person A, for whatever reason, withdraws the case. It could even be an abuse spouse, right? The police say in the media, unless it's not in this country, but I think it's here too, that doesn't matter whether the person's withdrawn the case. We have to proceed. Right? It could be an abused wife who's been coerced once again to withdraw the complaint or the claim that the husband assaulted or the partner assaulted her. You can still pursue a matter. Now, why can't you pursue this matter vigorously? Where you have the power to do so, why can't you arrest people who are not cooperating, starting with Ms. Son? Why don't you arrest her if she's not cooperating? What's the problem? Arrest her. Don't you have the power to arrest her? Why don't you arrest her now, this evening? So if she's not cooperating with you, and you have the power to act on a crime, alleged crime, even if the person making the complaint is not cooperating with you, can you arrest that person? If so, then it would be reasonable for the committee to say, arrest Ms. Son now. You're right here. Arrest her after this meeting. Right? Then you suggest previously and now in a roundabout way, and I can understand why you do so. You're an official. But my colleague, Comrade Temba, immediately, as I reported previously, when Steinhoff said we've opened up a case against Joosten, he said, you know, I did it at UNICEF because they're coming here. And Steinhoff must answer, is it not because you're not serious about it? You came, Ms. Sun. You did it because you had to give something to the committee. So, you know, it reinforces the image that this is not serious. Then the issue of, you say, General Khanna, that, you know, you're like, you have to take into consideration the words you use are Steinhoff's duty of care to the balancing act you speak about. Where you seem to be saying, if I understand you correctly, you want to investigate, but you have to take into account that Steinhoff has to also not collapse, is what you seem to be saying. And it's a responsibility to investors and UMPs are worried about jobs. But they are separate issues. If somebody has committed a crime, it's precisely because we are worried about job losses, and it's precisely because we are worried about the effects of Steinhoff's collapse of a chair on you know, all sorts of things. Credibility of this country, as David Mashlova says. You know. So those are separate issues. It's not for you to find a balancing act. That's not for you to do. That's for the MPs to maybe say, in our oversight, we look for the correct balances. Your job is very precise and clear. Arrest the criminals. Right? Hand them over to the NPA. That's what your job is. So one gets the sense, General Khanna, that you are looking for, like, excuses, really. And for me, the weakest link in this chain comes across as the hawk. Now, when I say this, General Khanna, can I make it as clear as possible that I am not suggesting you are errant, you personally are responsible? I'm talking of the hawks in general. So it's not to demean you or to unfairly treat you. My sense of you from a distance, I can't speak from Franka Buchmann and them can say, he said, you're a good policeman. You're a good civil servant, what I can tell. But really the issues are, if you don't have the capacity, technical and other, if you don't have the person power, what are the issues in that regard and what can we do as parliament to approach your, not your committee, but the committee that police committee, and approach the minister, then I think, comrades, colleagues, I would like to suggest that we call the head of the hawks here next time. Mm-hmm. But in the meanwhile, we can't wait till then, that if it's agreeable to this committee, that we write to the hawks and the minister and say we are extremely concerned about the poor progress by the hawks. Of all the organizations here today, the regulators, the hawks seems to me at least to be the least effective. It's not clear to me why you're not more proactive, apart from if you are, then you aren't, then because it may be resources, but why can't you, wouldn't your limited resources, you keep going back to the PwC report, that will assist, but there are other ways in which you can establish whether you have a case against Mr. Eustace and anybody else. Have you met Mr. Eustace? If not, why not? Because he's been accused. Then you have a Section 34 matter. You previously implied, unless I misunderstood you, that Section 34 is not like the best route to secure investigative process. Then can you change it from a Section 34 to what is more appropriate? A person comes to you in terms of this law. Why can't you advise that person, look, if you use that law, it's more difficult to proceed in the investigation. If you use this law, we can achieve the investigation more effectively and speedily. Can you do that, or is that against the law? If it's against the law or some policy, what policy? So it is a bit worrying that at 25 past 7, when, you know, there are fewer members here, we're getting the most disappointing report, dismal report, right? But I also think we should change this around. Mm. The first person that must speak from now on, not person, sorry, is Hawks. We're focusing on you. I did speak to your chairperson twice. I even phoned him on the day you were appearing when I saw that it was going to happen. And we kept exchanging, missing each other, to say, please, 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 can you do something about ensuring we got progress on this matter? So, I'll leave it for now there. Actually, I don't have any other questions. What I want is the members to give some mandate to the chairs. It has to be written by all four chairs. So not, you have to respond what you think to the minister and to the Hawke's Head and to ask for action and to require the Hawke's Head to be here without implying that you're not performing. Because we don't have evidence for that. Okay, done.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. To start with a question from Honourable Mania. This case is currently dealt with by serious economic offences. The team that's dealing with this case consists of approximately six members, led by a colonel, the brigadier is overseeing. I'm overarching in charge of the investigation.
Why are they not here? One or two of them here? So that we can speak to them directly and find out whether you're exercising your oversight over them properly or your management of them. So that's another thing we need to discuss as a committee.
Okay.
We actually want the head of the Hawks here. We want you here and one or two other people who are dealing with the daily routine of pursuing this matter.
That's a good point. We will take care of that in the future meetings. In terms of capacity, you were speaking about auditors. We outsource that function. From a budget perspective, we have a budget of 5 million rand a year that is made available for appointment of auditors to assist us in dealing with cases. Where we run short of budget, National Treasury is more than willing to come in and assist us from a funding perspective in the appointment of auditors to deal with the cases. The honourable member there, you can rest assured, ma'am, that we will not drop this case. Neither will we let anything fall by the wayside. Honourable Chairperson, if I can, I think I started off by explaining how an ordinary fraud case is registered. Here we have three cases to answer that question in advance. The one is the Stellenbosch case 226 of 12-2017. The complainant there is a member of the Progressive Professionals Forum. I'm not going to mention the person's name. The next case is Stellenbosch case again. The complainant is representing Black First, Land First. The third case is registered by Benguela Global Investment. It's a Centen case. I can safely say, in not one of these three cases. Now, I just want us to take back. Maybe you will understand where we're coming from in the Hawks. Ordinarily, when a complainant comes to complain to say, I have been defrauded, he will say, how was he or she defrauded? When did they realize they were defrauded? By what amount were they defrauded? Who the suspect are who defrauded them? Those are the basis of an ordinary case, whether it's an assault, fraud, theft, or whatever. In these three cases, honorable members, they registered cases because they heard in the media of the fall of the share price of Steinhoff, and they requested the police to investigate. No information. All that the Hawks also has is the media report. Now, when we got the reports, immediately we opened our own inquiries to start following up. There was no indication what happened. They are investors.
But surely you can pursue that matter and you can get a case for them. They are simple people, not literate, maybe not even formally educated, who come to you and say, this happened to me, vaguely. But isn't it your job to go and give substance to the allegations? Is that not your job?
Indeed it is, sir.
So what have you done?
No,
you keep telling us...
Civilians will expect you to paint the podium.
Sorry?
I'm just saying to the general, civilians expect him to paint the podium.
Okay, right, fine.
The next one was when they said, Steinhoff said they opened a case against Mr. Uster. Like I indicated earlier, there was no case opened. A Section 34 report, I speak right in the beginning. A Section 34 report is a report whereby Section 34 of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act says to a person, it actually compels It says a person in the position of authority who comes to know or who ought reasonably have to come to know about acts of fraud, corruption, forgery and uttering to the value of 100,000 or more. It's now peremptory. They must report that to the reporting authorities, which is the HOC, the Office of the Head of Corruption. They gave that report, but in compliance of the report, you have to give a full exposition of what happened, how it happened, who is responsible for it. In that report, like I said they don't know who is it, what happened, and it's for that reason that I said in the beginning, I regarded that report as malicious reporting. Then we engaged Mr. Poison. Because all we know is a company has lost its share value. How it happened, investors are irate. They came to the police to say that we lost our share value. What was 10 rand is now worth 2 rand from reports in the media. We have to go now, rely on this report. We engaged Mr. Boyson in order for him to give more emphasis on what he's trying to say, maybe because he sits inside. He may have more information as to who. There was a name mentioned. But because of the matters and the investigation, nobody has been charged. We can't say who is. But there was no evidence as to what this person has done, or himself, or together with other people. And it is that statement from 31st of January that we are still waiting upon. Now, the cases that were reported, the report that was given to us, is the case that I said, the case that was registered in August, is where Masson is the complainant in. And it was registered this month. And it is a segment of the report from PwC. It is not the report from PwC what was given to us. It entails one transaction by a person. It is not the report. They are, or I don't know whether they are in possession of the interim report. But from where I sit, that interim report from PwC, that should shed light on what happens. And that's what is going to inform the statement of Mr. Boyson as to what really happened. Who did what that caused this to happen is still nowhere to be found. Now, I understand the position and the implication that it brings to the HOC to investigate. Police have a constitutional obligation to investigate cases. But I just want to beg your indulgence that if we investigate, we get sources, we get this. A source gives you information. You follow that up. You have to put that information into evidence. And until you can be able to put that into evidence by means of a sworn statement, then we are running. But I'm saying to this honorable committee today, we sit with information a lot of information. We have engaged with profiles on various people. But information under oath is not forthcoming. We have engaged Irma. Irma is doing investigations, they've done a lot. I went personally to Irma's office. And I had a meeting with Mr. O'Gallant. He could not make the meeting on the day. I met with two other seniors in that office. I asked them for their investigation to provide that to me. They said they cannot give me anything pertaining to their investigations. You speak to FSCA. My members asked them, how far are you with your investigation? Like I earlier said, they don't want to give us that information so that we can make the linkage to this case. We sit with various people who have done work. Like they say, but I cannot say this is what we got that will put us in a position to link it up. Because everybody, that's why I'm saying we are doing work, but in a silo mentality. It's time that we come together and trust one another.
General, due respect, you've been very repetitive, right? Very repetitive. Mm-hmm. And I think you made your point. We must give Stanoff a chance to reply to claims that they're not cooperating. The question is, okay. So you don't have, you're a flimsy case. They open a flimsy case. You admit that you can investigate. It's your job to investigate. Now you keep saying
we are engaging with people. We have meetings with them. It's not clear what the outcomes are. So I think we're going to come back to you after we hear Steinhoff, okay, so that we hear. But for now, can you answer the questions more precisely? Yeah, Mr. Mania? I'm facilitating you. I'm not asking you questions. But if you want to ask a new question, ask it now quickly.
So we can understand the process. I mean, it's common cause that at the center of the saga is a gentleman called Marcus Yersler. Why, for example, haven't you interviewed him or taken a statement from him under oath?
Have we asked him that question already? John, repeat, please. Okay. Go ahead. We have that question. I think I'll ask somebody else there.
Honorable Committee, I just beg your indulgence. You see, if we investigate the case, the first question was, if they are not cooperating, why haven't we arrested? We cannot just arrest for the sake of arresting and force people. It's also unfortunate that we are living in a constitutional democracy. No. For the sake of this, the thing is that, well, maybe it's a wrong choice of word. It's unfortunate. No. It is a wrong choice of word.
Yeah,
I would know that immediately.
I mean, you know, to be fair to General Khanna, I don't think he meant it.
No, it's a wrong choice of word.
You know, General, I don't know you very well, but I go by my political instinct, Andy. And then, I'm just saying, I think you need to, don't withdraw now suddenly. The fact is, we are all complicit in the fact that we are here at 25-8, and exactly what I think is going to happen. It's the chairs that are here and a few members. Right. So we will remember that and we'll note it. The question I want to ask is, in fairness to you, I don't think he meant it in a literal sense. It'll be very unfair to see a headline in the newspaper to say that the general said it's unconstitutional. It's sad that we got an unconstitutional state. I don't think you meant it in that sense. What you tried to say, as I understand it, General, English is my first language, it may not be yours, so it's about fairness, right? I think what you meant to say is that the constitutional state means, and the constitution means that the police are limited in how far they can go, because people have very strong, in the Bill of Rights and so on, individual rights. You didn't mean that they don't have a right to have that right, but it does constrain how far you can go. The court system means that for every little thing that happens, a terrible crime can be committed by a horrible person. We all know that person should be in jail for 4,000 years. He or she will go, usually he, to a court and get a case, to get a judge or a magistrate to prevent you from doing it. That's more or less what you meant. Is that not correct?
Totally correct, sir.
Yeah. And I really plead with people not to use this in debates in the House in a literal sense. There are media people here. We cannot prescribe to them, but it would look, to me, it seems very unfair. It's a command, again, of English language and the power of the English press. That's what it is. Unfair to people. And so I would hope, but you can't plead with them. I think that's what you meant, right? Okay.
Here, may I just come in here, because Major General Khan did indicate that they've tried to do this, but we can't really expect within our constitutional country to just expect him to arrest people. But that's why I couldn't understand why it was reported here under Steinhoff that they had actually opened a case of corruption. Because, you see, my understanding, even on a very, very elementary level, so if you go and report a case, the police say, well, do you want to lay a charge? At which point a case is opened. Now, when I see the words here and the phrase, they opened up a case, it means a case was opened up and one is then obliged to pursue it. That's what I couldn't understand.
That question in a variety of ways. Can you answer that, please? Why can't you just advise them to make the same claims against Mr. Yuster in terms of the appropriate law if this is not helping you to proceed with your investigation? Even if they're flimsy, why can't you investigate the matter?
Honorable Committee, that was done to to Mr. Joester. Mr. Joester was asked, Mr. Boysen was asked. Mr. Boysen is the one who reported the Section 34 report. Now, there's, like I said, there's a distinct difference. A person who has been defrauded goes into a police station. The policeman takes down his statement or her statement and registers a criminal docket. A Section 34 report, it is a report that you download from the internet, you complete it, and you send it to the police to say, follow up on this. The police is obliged to investigate that. And that docket, the minute I have a statement that brings about all the elements of a crime has been committed here, then that is then converted into a case docket, a criminal docket, to answer your question. That can be done, sir. The minute we get that statement from Mr. Boysen, Mr. Boysen in the first place was supposed to register the criminal docket.
I know what's going on, Mr. Boysen. Okay, answer the other questions quickly. Sorry.
General, I said civilians expect you to paint the podium because you see you need to make them understand in layman's terms the difference between reporting a case, because when a person reported a case and they're not under oath, they, it's totally no information they give you, and you must explain to them that the person has not registered a case under his name so that he can be under oath and be able to be questioned so that you can proceed. So this honorable member does not understand that thing. So that's the problem. Now you need to be patient with us and explain this thing in such a way that they will understand how it works. As long as you're trying to be a general, they will not understand this thing. Now I'm begging for you because my children have been stranded for 4 hours in my office, and I understand what you are saying. They don't, and because Stella Vater Dibokron on the drive Devil Road, you see. And now they want you to go there. They want you to tell something that you deal with differently. Now, it's the nature of the legislature. They need to understand that Stephen Boysen has not given you a personal statement under oath that implicates specific individual. For now, it remains a Section 34. And I don't know why David, who understands this thing very well, keeps quiet and not help to help us to go home.
We don't know that for a fact because we have to hear Steinhoff's side. So we're coming back to you. That's why I'm saying, can you answer quickly? We're going to Steinhoff, we're coming back to you. Because they're claiming differently. Yeah, but you finish the answers to the questions put to you. In any case, look, it is very clear. Whatever any member says, we have to fulfill our oversight role. We are very clear. Many of us have been here for a very long time. I'm very clear, personally. You're not answering the questions. I respect the right of people to disagree with me, and they have that right. You're not answering the questions, right? And you are contradicting yourself. And moreover, we're not asking you to do anything except what the law requires. So we can't ask you to do something beyond what the law requires. So can you answer the other questions? How many times have you met Mr. Joester? When? And how many times?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chair, I'm going to try and explain. There has to be, in order for you to look at anybody as a suspect, there has to be information under oath, deposed to by a person. A person must make a statement under oath that says...
Your answer to that question, if I understand you, is that you cannot speak to Mr. Joester until you have a statement under oath. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct, sir.
Right, fine. Can you answer now, Steinhoff? Why has Mr. Boysen, whoever, yourself, Ms. Son, not provided a statement under oath, B, why did you use 34 of PTRRA instead of some other law that might make it easier for them, if that's the case, to proceed with the investigation, C, why did you say that you've got the PWC report and they say they haven't got the report?
Sorry, Chair, can I just correct before they respond? We, like I indicated, Ms. Son laid a criminal case in August, which we are investigating. And that case deals with a segment. And that is under oath. That is a criminal case.
Okay, right. So that's a good point. You're reminding us. Then it is said that you did a case recently. Was it because suddenly you knew you were appearing before Parliament and you've done that under oath? So do we still need Steve Boysen's
own statement. What is the relationship between your January 30th or thereabouts case and this one?
Just before Stanoff responds, I also wanted to know, did the Hawks ask Stanoff, not Mr. Boyson, but Stanoff, that they want the statement? And did Stanoff or Ms. Son know that the Hawks is waiting for the statement from Mr. Boyson? Why is it being delayed up until now? Why are you still waiting? Did you know that the Hawks is still waiting for this? Did they tell you that they're waiting? I'm pleading, answer to the point, please don't beat around the bush. I have one sign language interpreter who needs a break. I can't leave. She can't take a break. I need the information. Answer to the point, please.
Sure, I just think there are three things that need to be clarified. When Steinhoff appeared for the first time, they claimed that they'd laid a charge in terms of the Corruption Act against Marcus Huerster. That now appears to be a lie. That's the first thing. The second thing is there now seems to be a separate matter. Heather Son has laid a charge in Sandton in relation to another matter. Now, what exactly is that case about? And then the point, of course, that you raised, why, at least on the Hawks version, is Steve Boyson not cooperating with the Hawks? Those three matters.
Fine. Okay, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. I must just state, and for the record, that this last process is extremely disheartening. We have put an incredible amount of effort and energy into this process to lead to one particular outcome, and that is to be able to provide sufficient information and evidence to the Hawks. So to hear what I'm hearing this evening is really putting me in a position where I'm extremely concerned. I think I have to refer some of these matters to Robert Dryman, who acts on behalf of the company with regards to PwC, but what I do know is that Steve Boyson stepped forward in the early days of this process and he made an affidavit and a submission. I also know that he made himself available on several occasions, three that I know of, to have conversations with the Hawks. There's been a team that have been working tirelessly on it and have engaged on several occasions. I've just texted Mr. Boyson to ask Dr. Boyson, I've just texted him to ask whether he's aware that the Hawks is waiting for a statement from him, and he has just confirmed via WhatsApp that he has no idea that this is being waited for from him. So Robert Dryman may be able to shed some further light on that, and I'll let him do that. I think further with regards to sharing information and making PwC available, I'm also aware that the company has said that the Hawks can use the PwC to the extent that they need for any information, for any resources. They have access to them as and when they need. And that the company agreed that because we see the severity of the matter, that the company carries the cost for that. And PwC carries their independence in the form of their reputation. They've got to demonstrate that they have done a robust and rigorous process, and they're on the hook for that, and the company has made that available. I think also the case, so how we have viewed this process is when we first uncovered and raised concerns, Steve Boyson, as chair of the audit committee, took the first step. He felt that there were certain processes that he understood, having gone through that, and some of that has been discussed before. The processes that he went through with the chairman at the time, asking questions, working together with the auditors to uncover what the nature of these problems are. With those concerns, he stepped forward and went and made that process, that information available. I just want to, our understanding then was that, and Robert will give us the detail of how that all unfolded, but we then understood that we must continue to work, we must continue to uncover, and we know that there will be others.
And as we go through the process of uncovering, we must make that available, and hence the case that I then signed. And that was the process we followed, and we felt we had significant information. Hence my point about being disheartened. And I'm also aware that this is now a public matter, and that there are that this will raise concerns for the other processes that we are following. So I will just implore this committee and this process to get to the bottom of this together with us. Because if this is the concern and the bottleneck, then this entire process is not going to lead where we think it should lead. So I'm just going to hand to Robert Drummond just to fill out some of the detail of exactly what happened. Robert, I'm going to ask you, and if we don't answer the questions, I'm going to ask you a question again, just to make sure that before we leave this process, all the facts of what occurred is on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Now, I am a lawyer. I am aware of the crime of defeating the ends of justice. I'm aware that if I give too much information now, that could undermine the prosecution. So certainly, if you do want to ask more information from me, do. It may be necessary to give some of the responses in committee rather than in public forum. But when we last had this interchange, when I represented Steinhoff at the last hearing, I said that nothing could be further from the truth, and I stick by that. The Section 34 report, there's been a number of questions as to whether it was cynical laying it the day before before the first parliamentary hearing. The history of it is, and Sipsi was present today, that 2 days before the parliamentary hearing, they served the compliance notice. The compliance notice required the company to take certain steps, and one of those was to ensure that the enforcement action was commenced with. The general is absolutely correct. After the forensics people who were dealing with the matter had spoken to people within the halls, they said, all you have to do is download the form. The general said it. Download the form. It's on the internet. Any of us can go and have a look. It's there. The form was downloaded. The information was filled in, and it was submitted. There's a specific number on the website which says to whom you must submit it. Before 7 o'clock the next morning, I had written confirmation that it had been received. So I can't change if people think that that's cynical. There's a regulator who's issued a compliance instruction, and the company starts the process. Of course, it had already started the process, but it starts in relation to enforcement. I think that that's probably a fairly sterile debate now as to whether it's cynical or not. It happened, and interaction followed between the Hawks and Steinhoff. Mr. Boyson never in his own capacity made any complaint. Everything that he did as the chairman of the audit committee and on behalf of the company, and it's in that capacity that I assisted him. We were asked and in touch on a fairly regular basis. He at first on his own, and thereafter with me, and thereafter with me and PwC. The forensic investigators were in touch with the investigating team. We traveled to Pretoria. It became clear, and in that process, a further affidavit was put in. It became clear in that process, just as we've learned throughout the day today, that without a complete PwC report, a charge sheet, a formal complaint, would be a sterile and useless operation. The investigating team, which included a colonel and a captain, and at times a brigadier, asked us to meet with a more multidisciplinary team, and that meeting happened after we had received a detailed letter on the 3rd of May, raising detailed questions which the multidisciplinary team wanted answered. At the meeting with the multidisciplinary team,
when was the meeting?
So, in fact, there was a meeting before the 11th of July meeting, a meeting in Pretoria. I don't have the date with me. I can find that. The meeting
was before the middle of July, somewhere.
It was in April, if I remember correctly. We attended the meeting. They saw the point that we raised, that we were dealing with a very difficult process if we were wanting to complete that statement before the PwC report was completed, the process would probably be endless. On the 14th of May 2018, from a very, very senior member of that team, I received a letter by email, and it's copied to two other members of that. It's not from the Hawks. Dear Mr. Dryman, I confirm that for now, the questions raised in our letter of the 3rd of May 2018 will be held in abeyance until after the meeting of 11 July 2018 at the PwC offices. That meeting was spoken about by my invitation on behalf of Steinhoff. Every regulator who was interested and every enforcement agent who was interested was present. At that meeting, the Hawks were represented by a brigadier, a colonel, and a captain. I can't remember if there were other people present. There were other members of the enforcement team, and by that I mean other than SIPC and the other people who've spoken today. And it was agreed. You heard that a presentation was made by PwC as to what they'd uncovered and what the details of it were and what the extent was and why it would take a long time to complete a formal charge in the sense that the generals spoke about. At that meeting on the 11th of July, we were instructed and mandated to prepare a special report, which is the report that Mrs. Son submitted under oath, and in respect of which we have a written receipt from a colonel in the Hawks. So I'm afraid I'm at a loss. I really don't know. We seem to perhaps have been talking to a different branch of the Hawks, a different division of the Hawks. We seem to have been talking to other people, very senior people. They have, and as I say, if you wish, I found that email sitting here. We can go into committee and I can show you the email. Somebody at a deputy director level instructing us to proceed in a particular way because they believe that that was the most effective.
Not him. I just want to ask Heather if she's fine on a humanitarian base. Are you okay? Chair, I'm asking Heather if she's fine on a humanitarian basis and comfortable with it so that we... Okay.
I'm fine.
Right. Now you're being facetious, Mr. Lees. But I can't stop people. Right. Mr. Mania.
Chair, I just want to get some further clarity. I mean, we now... I seem to have a better understanding of the public understanding was that you'd actually laid a charge against Marcus Yersin. It now seems that you submitted a Section 34 report prior to the hearing. So we have some clarity on that, and we hope that we receive a copy of that Section 34 report as per our previous request. I just want clarity on then, according to the general, there was a second case opened by Heather Song, based on some, which included a statement. Now, what specifically was that about? Could you just expand on that point? And is it possible to get a copy of that statement?
Well, Mr. Mania, the copy of the Section 34 report, I think that is a report which is in the hands of the authorities, and with their permission, we would give you that report. In my view, and I'm not being pompous, so please if it comes across that way, but my view as an attorney, by handing out a copy of the report, it would have the tendency of defeating the ends of justice. That being said, it has been what was intended to be in the report was discussed with the prosecutorial team who work in conjunction and other enforcement agents who work in conjunction with the authorities.
We're not agreeing to that at this stage. We will have to get advice. We are not going to do anything that's going to undermine any possibility that the people who did this end up in jail for a very long time. So you're giving us your legal opinion. Advocate Jenkins is human. I think Tandi also has huge pressures, but we have to finish. Because, are we coming to Tandi? She doesn't have any more rights than anybody else. And she knows that. So I'm raising now as a chair this thing, that Mr. Mania says He must get discussions with Frank Jenkins. We are not asking you to do anything at this stage that will prejudice the case. And I don't know what the value would be to have the thing, but that's Mr. Mania's right to ask. Mr. Mania also has no more rights than anybody else. He can follow up with a question, but Tandy, I'm told, has something. And look, let's be fair to Tandy, right? We're not going to publicly expose to the media here. Not expose, deal with her family challenges, right? I mean, she's got responsibilities, and if need be, she has to leave, but this committee cannot end its meeting because we have to finish today.
Don't preempt what I'm going to say. I was not asking to leave. I was actually trying to assist the table because, to be honest, David has gone into legal issues. And if there is an issue that we need clarity on, we need to do it through our legal advisor. And I was trying to, that's why I'm saying, don't preempt what I'm going to say. Because I was worried. There's been an exposure here. That's why I was asking Heather if she's okay. There's an exposure, and it seems as if you don't pick it up. When a person opens a case and they have not put it in the public discourse, and it's now being discussed in the public discourse, we are putting ourselves, and you see, David is doing that on behalf of the committee. The committee can be litigated. Now, I'm very worried. We had to take a step back and know what, how we are proceeding.
Fine. We're agreeing. We're not proceeding with that matter, and the lawyers will decide on that one. So basically what I'm saying then is I want to make a suggestion, right? Let's see if this goes down. So we're going to give General Khanna a right of reply because there's lots of innuendos in what you are saying. He too is exposed here. I can see one journalist, two journalists here. I don't know who the other people are. Presumably Mr. Eustace has got people noting what's being said here as well, right? I see some odd faces. I've never seen them before. Presumably they're here on his behalf, or I don't know whose behalf, maybe some investor. But the point I want to make is, he has a right of reply, then you have a right of reply. And then I want to suggest a process. Right, General Khanna.
Honorable Committee Chairperson, I am not pointing fingers at, I'm just stating the obvious and the facts. When I say we are still waiting for a statement, it's a statement that's sitting Bergman's attorneys, appointed by Steinhoff to assist Mr. Boysen, is drafting their statement with Mr. Boysen. That's where we are. We are not moving left with Mr. Boysen unless we deal with Bergman's. That is where we are. We cannot engage with Bergman's, because Mr. Boysen is with Mr. Boysen, because he says to us, Bergman's is my attorneys, and deal with them when you deal with me. Now, this is not normal. Because if you are a complaining party, you come to the police and report the matter, unless you may find yourself, you may incriminate yourself. Then you have the right to have an attorney to assist you in making a statement. Now, but Mr. Boysen is not in that, doesn't fall in that category, because he came to us with a report. And why Bergman's takes so long, it may be because they are busy working through some other things, but the fact of the matter is we still do not have the report as we sit here. I have consulted with my team of investigators up to now, and this is the fact that we have. We are still waiting for that statement. And as we are now here, honorable members, there is not a shred of evidence under oath that will allow me to go to anybody to question them, to say we have this information under oath, or to approach any prosecutor with a request to give me a warrant of arrest to arrest anybody. Gone are the days where we as the police would go and arrest people without a warrant of arrest.
Yeah, we know that, right? So what's your reply? So can you reply, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair, thank you, Heather. So factually, we don't disagree. I think that the facts are more or less, it's why the facts are that we disagree. It's why the facts are as they are that we disagree. I'm sorry, my mic seems to shriek, so it's not picking me up properly. Maybe what I'll do is I'll put this one and see if it works better. What I'm saying is that we're getting instructions from, it seems, a different branch of the enforcement agents telling us to do something, which we're happily complying with, and in fact spending quite a lot of time and resources, it comes at a cost to get this right. It's not merely me. There are teams of people. We sat in a room probably with 20 people or more, of whom only five people represented Steinhoff. The rest of them were from the enforcement agents and the regulators. This is what was agreed with them. If the process is out of line with what General Carnes says, there is a statement. It's a statement under oath. If we need to go in the committee, I can show it. I can show you the receipt that we got from an officer in the halls. It's not going to help much. What we need is, if that team of the halls isn't the one that's actually driving the process, tell us what to do. We'll comply.
I must just clarify a couple of points. I think the statement that I made under oath was not in my personal capacity. Just to correct that, you made the comment. I did it on behalf of the company. I would like to share with you the details of that report. I'm advised that it would defeat the ends of justice.
You're not going to do anything of that sort. And a member can say what they want. They don't have any rights above the law and the Constitution.
But I want that to be clear, Chair, because I think there's also... there are aspersions being cast which I take very seriously, and I respond very strongly that we have a behaviour of non-cooperation. That is certain. It has never been our approach through this entire process. And the matter that Robert raises with regards to SIPSI, I know he said that we can take a cynical view on that, but I asked him to address it during our break, because it's often raised that we did that as a PR stunt. Again, it casts an aspersion on how we conduct ourselves, and it's a small matter, but a big matter when they all start to add up. We've got a marathon ahead of us. And we responded in opening or submitting that Section 34 report to a deadline that was placed on us from an external source. It was placed on us by SIPSI, and we had to respond within a certain number of hours. It just happened to be before we arrived at Parliament. Perhaps they also were under pressure to get all their matters done. But I think it casts aspersions on who we are and what we're trying to do, and I just have to clarify that, and I will continue to do so in the months to come. Thank you.
Just a way forward. No, let me suggest a way forward, and then the members will decide what we're going to do. Firstly, I want to repeat, we are not implying, Heather, Ms. Swan, that you in particular or any of the individuals here are doing something dishonest and so on. We don't have the evidence. But you're dealing with the corporate culture, and we make no apology for being skeptical, even suspicious, about the way the corporate sector works. That I don't think we should apologize for. You brought this upon yourself as the corporate sector. The litany of examples of skullduggery, corruption, manipulation, bribery, and so on of the private sector. Now, that does not mean that you as individuals are responsible. But I don't think it's fair to imagine that you've managed things in the three sittings we've had with you as well as you could have. And maybe it's because you don't know how Parliament works efficiently, or maybe the members are doing the jobs that we should be doing in the first instance. But whatever the reason, I want to make it clear, I don't think we should be apologetic about the general thrust of our engagement with you. We're doing what we have to do. But we're not saying that you as individuals are dishonest or anything. In any case, Ms. Swan, there's no accusation against you. You've come in unscathed here. Maybe it's inept negotiations with parties from the and your lawyers with the Hawks. But Mr. General Khanna, we are not clear between the two sides, as it were, who is really being fair, to what extent are people misleading us, or is it just that you're talking past each other? So what I want to suggest is this. We
give you a certain period of time, within 2 weeks, if that's reasonable, what the committee members say, for you to meet and sort these issues out. General Khanna, we don't want you to be there alone. We want all the people. Can you send him a letter? Or we want a copy of a letter from you, Mr. Truman. We do not want to know what's in all these documents until we are clear that we're entitled to it. We parliamentarians pass the laws of this country. We can't be above the laws that we pass. So no one's going to do that from any party. No, not under our watch. Now, the second thing is, we would like you to give us the list of people you've met. To the three, we'll distribute just the list of people you met, unless you can give us some reason why you can't. But before you give us the list, give it to General Khanna. He must tell us what the protocols are and why he can't release the list, and give us the relevant rule, policy, or law that prevents us as Parliament having it, and then we will confirm with our lawyers. The next thing is, we are asking you, and unless you can tell us, General Khanna, within 24 hours why Parliament cannot do this, is to meet with them. I'm going to inform your chairperson and your minister, and so on. The next thing is, I suggest that you send us a report within 14 days, a joint report. Again, General Khanna, if it's not possible, explain to us why we can't do it. Do the report together and say, this is what we agreed to, this is what we don't agree on, and this is our way forward from both sides. We will look at the report, and then we will decide whether we call you, only you two. I mean, Steinhoff and yourself. And that will be done, if it's necessary, reasonably soon after we get your report. So that's the way forward. We are not going to be able here, without sufficient numbers, and without, we can take decisions, but the credibility of what we do, if you don't carry all the MPs with you, or a significant number, it's not going to work. So reconvene if we have to, but in the first instance, let them do the homework that we feel they should. Now, Joan, Wilma, and then we hand over to the members. Joan?
Right. Chairperson, I certainly would agree in principle with the process you asked have outlined, because I think it's fair. It does, I believe, give all the respondents here that have come to meet us adequate time. And I would certainly like, as they clarify issues, to clarify the issue around perhaps which unit may have been communicated with in the Hawks itself. But I do want to thank everyone here, myself, for certainly doing it would seem at this point in time giving us their cooperation. Thank you.
Can I remind members what has also been proposed? Joan, it's important the chairs collectively agree on this, because ultimately we are accountable for the committees, especially in the absence of sufficient numbers here. The idea was put that we should write to the minister concerned to express our concern, and we'll be very clear, we're not casting any aspersions on you personally. Secondly, we should insist that we'll send a copy of the letter to the head of the Hawks, that in future, the head of the Hawks must come here, even if all he does is make some preliminary remarks and you take over, and we want your team here. A reasonable cross-section of your team that's met with Steinhoff. Right, so those are the proposals. Wilma, where are you on this?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Before I agree to what you said previously, before I agree, I would like to say that we're not here for ourselves. We are here for the public servants who are concerned. And we are here for the people who are concerned that their pension fund is there and what is happening to that. They're expecting to get, after all the years that they've worked, and now all of a sudden it's reduced, loss of shares, loss of money. They can't come here and say how they feel, and we speak on behalf of them. Steinhoff and the General Khanna, the people are expecting us to work together, but I can see that you're not working together. You're working in different directions. We can't see who's right, who's wrong. We don't see that. So like Chair, like you said, that report within 14 days, please. I agree that the letter be written to the minister, and all who met with Steinhoff, who's in the Hawks, in whatever department, we need to hear from them as well. What has been happening? We need to move forward on this. We really need to do that. Thank you.
So over then to the members who haven't spoken yet. Mr. Mania.
Chair, I support your proposal. I just have one last question to Steinhoff that's unrelated to...
The last item on the agenda now is each person is entitled to three questions, up to 3 minutes, up to the time we finish, to Steinhoff now. That's the last item. We've not come to that yet. We're finishing over the Hawks. Fine. Okay. Now the last section. Wilma had a question, I know, to Steinhoff. You've got up to three questions as a start.
So, I mean, I think a common theme through the investigating authorities and regulators is that a lot hinges on the final PwC report. What concerns me is that in your documents you say that you believe that the investigation will be substantially completed by the end of 2018. My conclusion is that the truth of the matter is that PwC will only produce an interim report at the end of 2018. Do you agree with that? And that, in fact, the report will not be finalized in 2018. It will simply be an interim report. That's the one question. Then just to come back to the second matter which you lodged with the police. I accept that giving a copy of the statement on your version might defeat the ends of justice. If that's the case, I have no difficulty with it. But can you explain why it is that you lodged that second the second case, and what matters broadly it traversed?
Fires, you're not going to defeat the ends of justice, right? Then that question should be asked by way of a written question. Frank should look at it and so on. I think we should tread carefully. I don't have a problem with you asking the question as a matter of, let's say, oversight. I have a legal issue with it, and the job of the chairs is to painstakingly, the Speaker's office has made it clear to us, Frank, not prejudice anything. But asking the question, morally, you're right to ask it. I don't have a problem. So can we hold horses on that one? Yeah.
Chair, have this on as lawyered up. If on the advice of her lawyers, this could compromise the
Yeah, but it's not just her lawyer's opinion.
She's free not to ask the question.
No, I know, but on this one, no. We're treading here on this. Robert Dreeman is human. You're not the law, universal law. You're one lawyer. Advocate Jenkins may not agree. He's speaking for Parliament. He's done a lot of work in this area. So I don't want you to answer a question in good faith, my friend. And he says it's fine. And then, you know, we need all the lawyers here, Parliament and you. He's not here for a basic, no one anticipated we can sit till here. He's got a family challenge, and one should be human. Nothing stops Mr. Mania from raising this question when Frank is here. So I'm alerting you that Robert Dreeman can say what he wants to say, but ultimately the three chairs are going to decide whether you answer or not. Right. So what else? You have a third question? Okay. Your three questions, Mr. Lees?
Yeah.
You don't have them? Fine. Okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with the PwC matter. I think to answer the question fully, one needs to understand what the purpose and approach of PwC is. And as we say in page 16 of our presentation, there were three key aims. There's to determine what happened, there's a financial investigation, and then there's a responsibility issue, which is issues that we have debated at length today. Is there have been two reports to date that I've referred to earlier. There has been constant verbal feedback from PwC, which has led to interaction with regulators that we've referred to. It leads to corrective actions that we can take as a group as a company. And I think that it's not correct. I think on the one hand, what is expected in the marketplace is that there will be this one encompassing report. I think that is not correct. What there will be is, if we look at the three aims, one of them is that we undertake to try our utmost to have financial statements by the end of 2017, or by the end of this year for 2017. Now, that's a part of the PwC report. On top of that, there's a whole host of litigation that is ongoing. Now, PwC is one of the many work streams that they have is to support us with the litigation, both on a defense side, but also on potential actions that we need to institute. So there will be reports from that. So it's a bit of a roundabout answer, but there, it is not envisaged that they will come, say, the 7th of December. Here's a, so I hope I addressed the question, what has been put to us.
Any other questions left to Steinhoff? Oh, Rupert Driven?
So without going into details of the report, Chair, the report was based on a strategy involving 20 or more enforcement regulatory agencies, which included the Hawks and other enforcement agents. The content of it.
All right. Further questions, please? Yes. Mr. Lees, three questions.
David will ask his own form of this question, but you know, a lot of the discussion today has been about this, we're waiting for this report. And actually, it doesn't sound like there is going to be a report. But there has to be a report if things are going to move forward from what I've been hearing all day. So even if it's not a huge, full, big report, there has to be something that can be used to go forward.
Right, I understand him to be saying that there will be a report, but it's not going to be like one final inter-report. So unless you know, Mr. Lee...
I think you make the point on my behalf, thank you, Chair.
Right.
Well, you're making the point of... Let him answer the question. What exactly can we expect in 2018? There are three objectives. Which of those objectives do you think will be met?
It goes back to the three key aims that I've dealt with, is that what has happened, that is an ongoing process. This is a massive, and that will be in stages, so I think that will be a segmented report, and one will get to that as and when. Things are uncovered, as we've dealt with, there has been suspensions that we referred to earlier. That was a result of a report. So that deals with what has happened, and there might well be further actions that get taken against individuals in the foreseeable future. Financial investigation deals with two sides, interaction with the regulators that we've heard, but we've also, as I said, we need to deal with financial statements, and we've set our guidelines and our timelines on that, and the responsibility issue is on the one hand on the civil side, dealing with civil actions that the company might institute. Again, that, as we know, with litigation will take time. And then secondly, on the debate on the criminal side that we've been having over the last hour. So, again, it's not one big book that will be presented, but it's a stage approach, which if you put it all together, at the end of the day, there will be one massive report that may consist of 7 or 8 or 10 volumes. At this stage, we just don't know.
It
will not be all of that, honourable member, will not be done. Will not be done. There will be reports by December. But
no, you can't decide for me. If you're unhappy, go right to the speaker. Now, I want to ask you something. Are you putting enough pressure on Price Waterhouse to deliver? They can be thorough and painstaking, but instead of working a 10-hour, you can pay them. Shouldn't they work a 14, 15-hour day? In other words, we asked you this before. What pressure are you putting on PwC? Because that's the woolly side. It's not your answer. It's the extent to which you're putting them under pressure to do their job, but do it expeditiously.
There's a number of points. There is ultimately PwC reports to the supervisory board. There have been, over the last 6 or 7 months, 3 or 4 formal feedback sessions that I can recall offhand now. From a management board perspective, I'm the person that's responsible with dealing with PwC. I speak to PwC most days, 3 or 4 times a day. have bi-weekly meetings with them where I get updates as to where they are, what they're busy with. At the moment, there's a team of over 100 people of PwC that all over the world is working with it. We're working on this matter. They have got three very senior people in South Africa that lead the investigation. And I'm comfortable that, and PwC will obviously speak for themselves, is that we are all over them to ensure that this is done as quickly as possible.
Right. Mr. Lennon has got a complaint about the chairing. What's the complaint? And another chair was
fine. No, it's fine. Is it correct to say there will be no final PwC report in December 2018?
I think that is correct, because I say it for the following reason. As I referred to, there's a number of issues inter alia dealing with litigation that will follow.
We've spoken about a PwC report, we've spoken about the audit. Just an initial quick one, what is your financial year ending?
Chair, it's at the end of September, so we intend to publish this Friday the third quarter results. That will be the trading updates for the third quarter, with a year end at the end of September. And the plan is then to have the audited financial statements for the year ended September 2018 published by the end of January 2019, which is the normal statutory four-month period.
Right. No, thank you.
Who's next? Any questions? We're done. You sure? Okay. Nobody feels suppressed, oppressed, and repressed? Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to say, finally, particularly this time. Sorry, yes, please.
Yeah, just one comment that was made from the chair over there with regards to the concern. I'm unhappy about that we are leaving here with a sense that there's no cooperation. And I just want to commit the company and ourselves to understanding exactly what the challenges are in our dealings with the Hawks, and we will undertake to come back within 14 days. Thank you.
Well, there we are. we're not saying there's no cooperation. We're saying there's enough cooperation, right? I think that's the overall sense. Comrade Wilma is entitled to what she says, but the overall sense is that, right? Secondly, we're saying that we want a report within 14 days. We're not asking you to come back. It's only after we look at the report, members look at it, and then they'll come back and say whether we want to physically call you again. That will be necessary only if the report doesn't go far enough. Right? Then the final thing to say is, look, Mr. General Khanna represents the public sector, and we don't apologize for anything we've said. We're doing our job. The private sector is not used to this robust exchange, maybe. Heather in particular, Ms. Son, particularly you, maybe. I don't know. But we want to, unless there's evidence to the contrary, now that people can produce, drive to this committee, we are saying to you that We know you've been put under a lot of stress and strain. It's not about you personally or Mr. Louis Dupree or all of you. It's because, as Wilma says, we're just doing our job. So we thank you for the cooperation we've secured from people so far. And as I've repeatedly said, Ms. Son, you have been extremely over the phone obliging, extremely helpful. You reply almost immediately I phone you, right? So I want to stress this, that you know what? To be fair, and our call comrade there did raise it. Mm. We feel you're being personally,
yeah.
Let's say, put your back is against a wall. Actually, we got nothing against you personally. There's not even a shred of inkling of suggestion that you personally have done anything wrong. And finally, the investigative authorities will tell. Well, it's not our job. Right. So she said, Comrade De Tandy, are you okay? So I feel that maybe it's the first time you've been through something like this. Please know that we appreciate the way you've that you've cooperated with us to the extent you can. You're not used to this experience. We don't apologize for, or CIP, the state sector. So we thank you for that. Also, we know that the last flight from Cape Town to Johannesburg has passed you by, if I'm correct. So
I'm based in Cape Town.
Yeah, you're based in Cape Town. Okay, but others are presumably, are you all Cape Town based? Oh, then we don't have to apologize for anything. Yeah.
Well, yes, please do. They will send us to dinner with you, and then they'll have already issued a statement. This might have been planned, by the way, at lunchtime. To just seem to see the chairperson. They're colluding with Steinhoff and all of that, right? Okay. So having said that, I want to thank you all, including General Connor. And you want to say something quickly, yes?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Well, before you conclude everything, I just wanted to say also, when I mentioned Ms. Sons, everything I said and whose ever name was on behalf of Steinhoff, obviously. Their statements reflect that. And that we do engage with each other, that it's just here, no aspersions from our side. What I've said is what where we are. Thanks. And
I forgot to say.
The last year, my head would have been here. But he was called back. He was in Cape Town, but they had to fly back last night. Otherwise, he would have...
And we're going to ask him to be here. Okay, one final thing. You can write... I don't know if you can do it, but what we would like to know is, if, as seems to us, the Hawks doesn't have the capacity because of the complexity of these issues, then what capacity do you need? And maybe you'll answer this quickly, please. And why can't you get external capacity? And maybe we speak to your chairperson of your committee and ask him to engage with the minister. Then we go and speak to our minister and say, can you help out, please? They need external capacity.
Yeah.
Do you want to comment on that? That to the Hawks chairperson, I mean Hawks head, and we will pursue this further with you offline. Thank you. Right, Joan, and then Wilma, and then we finish.
You know, co-chair, for me, we really had to carve out the time to be here, and why did we as trade and industry? We're working with four bills because it is so important now more than ever that the financial stability in the country and the credibility of our companies is not undermined. It is very, very important. And then the third aspect is when one heard of the amount of the quantification of the funds in respect of pensions, that was alarming as well. So for us, it was very, very important to see what is it with those institutions over which we have a mandate, what can be done and how effectively, and to hear from you, what is it that you think we could do to try and ensure that we don't have a repeat performance in the corporate sector. Thank you.
Wilma? Okay, can we also thank you, my friend, the translator, the aide to Wilma, because she's been severely stressed because normally they change every 20 minutes. So thank you indeed. Thank you all. We don't thank the media, that's their job. Thank you.